written by Terry Pratchett and read by Nigel Planer. It was a moonless night, which was good for the purposes of Solid Jackson. He fished for curious squid, so-called because as well as being squid, they were curious. That is to say, their curiosity was the curious thing about them. Shortly after they got curious about the lantern that Solid had hung over the stern of his boat, they started to become curious about the way in which various of their number suddenly vanished skywards with a splash. Some of them even became curious, very briefly curious, about the sharp, barbed thing that was coming very quickly towards them. The curious squid were extremely curious. Unfortunately, they weren't very good at making connections. It was a very long way to this fishing ground, but for Solid, the trip was usually well worth it. The curious squid were very small, harmless, difficult to find, and reckoned by connoisseurs to have the foulest taste of any creature in the world. This made them very much in demand in a certain kind of restaurant, where highly skilled chefs made, with great care, dishes containing no trace of the squid whatsoever. Solid Jackson's problem was that tonight, a moonless night in the spawning season, when the squid were especially curious about everything, the chef seemed to have been at work on the sea itself. There was not a single interested eyeball to be seen. There weren't any other fish either, and usually there were a few attracted to the light. He'd caught sight of one. It had been making through the water extremely fast in a straight line. He laid down his trident and walked to the other end of the boat, where his son Les was also gazing intently at the torch-lit sea.
"Not a thing in half an hour," said Solid. "You sure we're in the right spot, Dad?"
Solid squinted at the horizon. There was a faint glow in the sky that indicated the city of Al-Khali, on the Klatchian coast. He turned around. The other horizon glowed too with the lights of Ankh-Morpork. The boat bobbed gently halfway between the two.
"Course we are," he said,
but certainty edged away from his words. Because there was a hush on the sea. It didn't look right. The boat rocked a little, but that was with their movement, not from any motion of the waves. It felt as if there was going to be a storm. But the stars twinkled softly, and there was not a cloud in the sky. The stars twinkled on the surface of the water, too. Now that was something you didn't often see.
"I reckon we ought to be getting out of here," Solid said.
Les pointed at the slack sail.
"What are we going to use for wind, Dad?"
It was then that they heard the splash of oars. Solid, squinting hard, could just make out the shape of another boat heading towards him. He grabbed his boat hook.
"I knows that's you thieving foreign bastard!"
The oars stopped. A voice sang over the water.
"May you be consumed by 1,000 devils, you damned person!"
The other boat glided closer. It looked foreign, with eyes painted on the prow.
"Fished 'em all out, have you? I'll take my trident to you bottom-feeding scum that you are! My curvy sword at your neck, you unclean son of a dog of the female persuasion!"
Les looked over the side. Little bubbles fizzed on the surface of the sea.
"Dad," he said.
"That's greasy Arif out there," snapped his father. "You take a good look at him. He's been coming out here for years, stealing our squid, the evil, lying little devil."
"Dad, there's..."
"You get on them oars and I'll knock his black teeth out."
Les could hear a voice saying from the other boat,
"See, my son, how the underhanded fish thief..."
"Row,"
his father shouted.
"To the oars," shouted someone in the other boat.
"Whose squid are they, Dad?"
said Les.
"Ours."
"What, even before we've caught them?"
"Just you shut up and row."
"I can't move the boat, Dad. We're stuck on something."
"It's 100 fathoms deep here, boy. What's there to stick on?"
Les tried to disentangle an oar from the thing rising slowly out of the fizzing sea.
"Looks like a chicken, Dad."
There was a sound from below the surface. It sounded like some bell or gong slowly swinging.
Chickens can't swim.
It's made of iron, Dad.
Solid scrambled to the rear of the boat. It was a chicken, made of iron. Seaweed and shells covered it, and water dripped off it as it rose against the stars. It stood on a cross-shaped perch. There seemed to be a letter on each of the four ends of the cross. Solid held the torch closer.
What the?
Then he pulled the oar free and sat down beside his son.
Row like blazes, Les!
What's happening, Dad?
Shut up and row. Get us away from it.
Is it a monster, Dad?
It's worse than a monster, son,
shouted Solid as the oars bit into the water. The thing was quite high now, standing on some kind of tower.
What is it, Dad? What is it?
It's a damned weathercock.
There was not, on the whole, a lot of geological excitement. The sinking of continents is usually accompanied by volcanoes, earthquakes, and armadas of little boats containing old men anxious to build pyramids and mystic stone circles in some new land, where being the possessor of genuine ancient occult wisdom might be expected to attract girls. But the rising of this one caused barely a ripple in the purely physical scheme of things. It more or less sidled back, like a cat who's been away for a few days and knows you've been worrying. Around the shores of the Circle Sea, a large wave, only 5 or 6 feet high by the time it reached them, caused some comment. And in some of the very low-lying swamp areas, the water swamped some villages of people that no one else cared about very much. But in a purely geological sense, nothing very much happened, in a purely geological sense.
It's a city, Dad. Look, you can see all the windows and...
I told you to shut up and keep rowing.
The seawater surged down the streets. On either side, huge, weed-encrusted buildings boiled slowly out of the surf. Father and son fought to keep some way on the boat as it was dragged along, and since lesson one in the art of rowing is that you do it while looking the wrong way, they didn't see the other boat.
You lunatic! Foolish man! Don't you touch that building! This country belongs to Ankh Morpork!
The two boats spun in a temporary whirlpool.
I claim this land in the name of the Serif of Al-Khali. We saw it first. Les, you tell him. We saw it first. We saw it first before you saw it first. Les, you saw him. He tried to hit me with that oar.
But, Dad, you're waving that trident.
See the untrustworthy way he attacks us, Akhan.
There was a grinding noise from under the keel of both boats, and they began to tip as they settled into the sea-bottom ooze.
Look, Father, there is an interesting statue.
He has set his foot on Clachian soil, the squid thief. Get those filthy sandals off Ankh Morporkian territory.
Oh, Dad!
The two fishermen stopped screaming at each other, mainly in order to get their breath back. Crabs scuttled away. Water drained between the patches of weed, carving runnels in the grey silt.
Father, look, there's still coloured tiles on the...
Mine!
Mine!
Les caught Akhan's eye. They exchanged a very brief glance, which was nevertheless modulated with a considerable amount of information, beginning with the sheer galactic-sized embarrassment of having parents, and working up from there.
Dad, we don't have to...
Les began.
You shut up, it's your future I'm thinking about, my lad.
Yes, but who cares who saw it first, Dad? We're both hundreds of miles from home. I mean, who's going to know, Dad?
The two squid fishermen glared at one another. The dripping buildings rose above them. There were holes that might well have been doorways, and glassless apertures that could have been windows. But all was darkness within. Now and again, Les fancied he could hear something slithering. Solid Jackson coughed.
The lad's right, he muttered. Daft to argue, just the four of us.
Indeed, said Arif.
They backed away, each man carefully watching the other. Then, so closely that it was a chorus, they both yelled,
Grab the boat!
There was a confused couple of moments, and then each pair, boat carried over their heads, ran and slithered along the muddy streets. They had to stop and come back with mutual cries of,
A kidnapper has well, huh?
To get the right sons. As every student of exploration knows, the prize goes not to the explorer who first sets foot upon the virgin soil, but to the one who gets that foot home first. If it is still attached to his leg, this is a bonus. The weathercocks of Ankh Morpork creaked around in the wind. Very few of them were in fact representations of Avis Domestica. There were various dragons, fish, and miscellaneous animals. On the roof of the Assassin's Guild, a silhouette of one of the members squeaked into a new position, cloak and dagger at the ready. On the Beggar's Guild, a tin beggar's hand asked the wind for a quarter. On the Butcher's Guild, a copper pig sniffed the air. On the roof of the Thieves' Guild, a real, if rather deceased, unlicensed thief turned gently, which shows what you're capable of if you try, or at least if you try stealing without a license. The one on the library dome of Unseen University was running slow and wouldn't show the change for half an hour yet, but the smell of the sea drifted over the city. There was a tradition of soapbox public speaking in Sartor Square. Speaking was stretching a point to cover the ranters, haranguers, and occasional self-absorbed mumblers that spaced themselves at intervals amongst the crowds. And traditionally, people said whatever was on their minds and at the top of their voices. The patrician, it was said, looked kindly on the custom. He did. And very closely, too. He probably had someone make notes. So did the watch. It wasn't spying, Commander Vimes told himself. Spying was when you crept around peeking in windows. It wasn't spying when you had to stand back a bit so that you weren't deafened. He reached out without paying attention and struck a match on Sergeant Detritus.
That was me, sir, said the troll reproachfully.
Sorry, Sergeant, said Vimes, lighting his cigar.
It's not a problem.
They returned their attention to the speakers.
It's the wind, thought Vimes. It's bringing something new.
Usually the speakers dealt with all kinds of subjects, many of them on the cusp of sanity or somewhere in the peaceful valleys on the other side. But now they were all monomaniacs.
Time they were taught a lesson, screamed the nearest one. Why don't our so-called masters listen to the voice of the people? Ankh Morpork has had enough of these swaggering brigands. They steal our fish, they steal our trade, and now they're stealing our land.
It would have been better if people had cheered, Vimes thought. People generally cheered the speakers indiscriminately to egg them on, but the crowd around this man just seemed to nod approval. He thought, they're actually thinking about what he said.
They stole my merchandise, shouted a speaker opposite him. It's a pirate bloody empire. I was boarded in Ankh Morpork waters.
There was a general self-righteous muttering.
What did they steal, Mr. Jenkins? Said a voice from the crowd.
A cargo of fine silks.
The crowd hissed.
Ah, not dried fish offal and condemned meat, then. That's your normal cargo, I believe.
Mr. Jenkins strained to look for the speaker.
Fine silks, he said. And what does the city care about that? Nothing.
There were shouts of shame.
Has the city been told? Said the inquiring voice.
People started to crane their heads, and then the crowd opened a little to reveal the figure of Commander Vimes of the City Watch.
Well, it's, Jenkins began. I care, said Vimes calmly. Shouldn't be too hard to track down a cargo of fine silks that stink of fish guts.
There was laughter. Ankh Morpork people always like some variety in their street theatre. Vimes apparently spoke to Sergeant Detritus while keeping his gaze locked on Jenkins.
Detritus, just you go along with Mr. Jenkins here, will you? His ship is the Milker, I believe. He'll show you all the lading bills and manifests and receipts and things, and then we can sort him out in jig time.
There was a clang as Detritus's huge hand came to rest against his helmet.
Yes, sir!
You can't, said Jenkins quickly. They stole the paperwork as well.
Really?
So they could take the stuff back to the shop if it doesn't fit. Anyway, the ship sailed.
Yes,
sailed. Got to try and recoup my losses, you know.
Sailed? Without its captain, said Vimes.
So Mr. Scoplett is in charge, your first officer.
Yes, yes.
Damn, said Vimes, snapping his fingers theatrically. That man we've got in the cells on a charge of being naughtily drunk last night. We're going to have to charge him with impersonation as well, then.
I don't know. More blasted paperwork. The stuff just piles up.
Mr. Jenkins tried to look away, but Vimes's stare kept pulling him back. The occasional tremble of a lip suggested that he was preparing a riposte. But he was bright enough to spot that Vimes's grin was as funny as the one that moves very fast towards drowning men, and has a fin on top. Mr. Jenkins made a wise decision and got down.
I'll go and sort... Well, I'd better go and...
he said, and pushed his way through the mob, which waited a little while to see if anything interesting was going to happen, and then, disappointed, sought out other entertainment.
"You want I should go and have a look at this boat?"
said Detritus.
"No, Sergeant. There won't be any silk, and there won't be any paperwork. There won't be anything except a lingering aroma of fish guts.
Well, them damn Clatchians steals everything that ain't nailed down, right?"
Vimes shook his head and strolled on.
"They don't have trolls in Clatch, do they?" he said.
"No, sir. It's the heat. Troll brains don't work in the heat. If I was to go to Clatch,"
said Detritus, his knuckles making little bink-bink noises as he dragged them over the cobbles,
"I'd be really stupid."
"Detritus?"
"Yes, sir."
"Never go to Clatch."
"No, sir."
Another speaker was attracting a much larger crowd. He stood in front of a large banner that proclaimed, "Greasy Foreign Hands Off Leshp."
"Leshp," said Detritus. "Now there's a name that ain't got its teeth in."
"It's the land that came back up from under the sea last week," said Vimes despondently.
They listened while the speaker proclaimed that Ankh Morpork had a duty to protect its kith and kin on the new land. Detritus looked puzzled.
"How come there's kith and kin on there when it only just come up from under the water?" he said.
"Good question," said Vimes.
"They've been holding their breath?"
"I doubt it."
There was more in the air than the salt of the sea, Vimes thought. There was some other current. He could sense it. Suddenly, the problem was Clatch. Ankh Morpork had been at peace with Clatch, or at least in a state of non-war, for almost a century. It was, after all, the neighbouring country.
Neighbours. But what did that mean?
The watch could tell you a thing or two about neighbours. So could lawyers, especially the real rich ones, to whom neighbour meant a man who'd sue for 20 years over a strip of garden 2 inches wide. People had lived for ages side by side, nodding to one another amicably on their way to work every day, and then some trivial thing would happen and someone would be having a garden fork removed from their ear. And now some damn rock had risen up out of the sea and everyone was acting as if Clatch had let its dog bark all night.
Said Detritus mournfully.
"Don't mind me. Just don't spit on my boot," said Vimes.
"It means," Detritus waved a huge hand, "like them things what only comes in..."
He paused and looked at his fingers while his lips moved.
"Fours. It means literally the time when you see them little pebbles and you just know there's going to be a great big landslide on top of you and it's already too late to run. That moment, that's..."
Vimes' own lips moved.
"Forebodings?"
"That's the bunny."
"Where does the word come from?"
Detritus shrugged.
"Maybe it's named after the sound you make just as 1,000 tons of rock hit you."
"Forebodings."
Vimes rubbed his chin.
"Yeah. Well, I've got plenty of them."
Landslides and avalanches, he thought. All the little snowflakes land, light as a feather, and suddenly the whole side of a mountain is moving. Detritus looked at him slyly.
"I know everyone say them 2 short planks they're as thick as detritus," he said, "but I know which way the wind is blowing."
Vimes looked at his sergeant with a new respect.
"You can spot it, can you?"
The troll's finger tapped his helmet twice, knowingly.
"It's pretty obvious," he said. "You see up on the roofs them little chickies and dragons and stuff? And that poor bugger on the Thieves Guild? You just has to watch 'em. They know. Beats me how they're always pointing the right way."
Vimes relaxed a little. Detritus's intelligence wasn't too bad for a troll, falling somewhere between a cuttlefish and a line dancer. but you could rely on him not to let it slow him down. Detritus winked.
And it looks to me like that time when you go and find a big club and listen to a granddad telling you how he beat up all them dwarfs when he was a boy, he said. Something in the wind, right?
Yes, said Vimes. There was a fluttering above him. He sighed. A message was coming in, on a pigeon. But they tried everything else, hadn't they? Swamp dragons tended to explode in the air, imps ate the messages, and semaphore helmets had not been a success, especially in high winds. And then Corporal Littlebottom had pointed out that Ankh-Morpork's pigeons were, because of many centuries of depredation by the city's gargoyle population, considerably more intelligent than most pigeons. Although Vimes considered that this was not difficult, because there were things growing on old damp bread that were more intelligent than most pigeons. He took a handful of corn out of his pocket. The pigeon, obedient to its careful training, settled on his shoulder. In obedience to internal pressure, it relieved itself. "You know, we've got to find something better," said Vimes as he unwrapped the message. "Every time we send a message to Constable Downspout, he eats it."
"Well, he are a gargoyle," said Detritus. "He think it's lunch arriving."
"Oh," said Vimes, "his lordship requires my attendance. How nice." Lord Vetinari looked attentive, because he'd always found that listening keenly to people tended to put them off. And at meetings like this, when he was advised by the leaders of the city, he listened with great care, because what people said was what they wanted him to hear. He paid a lot of attention to the spaces outside the words, though. That's where the things were that they hoped he didn't know and didn't want him to find out. Currently, he was paying attention to the things that Lord Downey of the Assassin's Guild was failing to say in a lengthy exposition of the Guild's high level of training and value to the city. The voice eventually came to a stop in the face of Vetinari's aggressive listening.
"Thank you, Lord Downey," he said. "I'm sure we shall all be able to sleep a lot more uneasily for knowing all that. Just one minor point. I believe the word assassin actually comes from Klatch."
"Well, indeed.
And I believe also that many of your students are, as it turns out, from Klatch and its neighbouring countries. The unrivalled quality of our education..."
"Quite so. What you are telling me, in point of fact, is that their assassins have been doing it longer, know their way around our city, and have had their traditional skills honed by you."
The patrician turned to Mr. Burley.
"We surely have superiority in weapons, Mr. Burley."
"Oh, yes. Say what you like about dwarfs, but we've been turning out some superb stuff lately," said the president of the Guild of Armourers.
"Ah, that at least is some comfort."
"Yes," said Burley.
He looked wretched.
"However, the thing about weapons manufacture, the important thing..."
"I believe you are about to say that the important thing about the business of weaponry is that it is a business," said the patrician.
Burley looked as though he'd been let off the hook onto a bigger hook.
Yes.
"That, in fact, the weapons are for selling."
Exactly.
"To anyone who wishes to buy them."
Yes.
"Regardless of the use to which they are going to be put."
The armaments manufacturer looked affronted.
"Pardon me? Of course. They're weapons.
And I suspect that in recent years a very lucrative market has been Klatch?"
"Well, yes. The Serif needs them to pacify the outlying regions."
The patrician held up his hand. Drumknot, his clerk, gave him a piece of paper.
"The great leveller cart-mounted 10-bank 500-pound crossbow," he said. "And let me see, the Meteor, automated throwing star hurler, decapitates at 20 paces, money back if not completely decapitated."
"Have you ever heard of the dregs, my lord?"
said Burley.
They say the only way to pacify one of them is to hit him repeatedly with an axe and bury what's left under a rock. And even then, choose a heavy rock.
The patrician seemed to be staring at a large drawing of the dervish, Mark III, razor wire bolas. There was a painful silence. Burley tried to fill it up. Always a bad mistake.
"Besides, we provide much-needed jobs in Ankh Morpork," he murmured.
"Exporting these weapons to other countries," said Lord Vetinari. He handed the paper back and fixed Burley with a friendly smile.
"I'm very pleased to see that the industry has done so well," he said. "I will bear this particularly in mind."
He placed his hands together carefully.
"The situation is grave, gentlemen."
"Whose?"
said Mr. Burley.
"I'm sorry?"
"What?
Oh, I was thinking about something else, my lord." "I was referring to the fact that a number of our citizens have gone out to this wretched island, as have, I understand, a number of Clatchians."
"Wire air people going out there," said Mr. Boggess of the Thieves Guild.
"Because they are showing a brisk pioneering spirit and seeking wealth and additional wealth in a new land," said Lord Vetinari.
"What's in it for the Clatchians?" said Lord Downey.
"Oh, they've gone out there because they are a bunch of unprincipled opportunists, always ready to grab something for nothing," said Lord Vetinari.
"A masterly summation, if I may say so, my lord,"
said Mr. Burley, who felt he had some ground to make up. The patrician looked down again at his notes.
"Oh, I do beg your pardon," he said. "I seem to have read those last two sentences in the wrong order. Mr. Slant, I believe you have something to say here?"
The president of the Guild of Lawyers cleared his throat. The sound was like a death rattle, and technically it was, since the man had been a zombie for several hundred years, although historical accounts suggested that the only difference dying had made to Mr. Slant was that he'd started to work through his lunch break.
"Yes, indeed,"
he said, opening a large legal tome.
"The history of the city of Leshp and its surrounding country is a little obscure. It is known to have been above the sea almost 1,000 years ago. However, when records suggest that it was considered part of the Ankh Morpork Empire..."
"What is the nature of these records, and do they tell us who was doing the considering?" said the patrician.
The door opened and Vimes stepped in.
"Ah, Commander, do take a seat. Continue, Mr. Slant."
The zombie did not like interruptions. He coughed again.
"The records relating to the lost country date back several hundred years, my lord, and they are, of course, our records."
"Only ours?"
"I hardly see how any others could apply,"
said Mr. Slant severely.
"Clatchian ones, for example," said Vimes from the far end of the table.
"Sir Samuel, the Clatchian language does not even have a word for lawyer," said Mr. Slant.
"Doesn't it?" said Vimes. "Good for them."
"It is our view,"
said Slant, turning his chair slightly so that he did not have to look at Vimes,
"that the new land is ours by eminent domain, extraterritoriality, and most importantly, acquiris quodcumque rapis. I am given to understand that it was one of our fishermen who first set foot on it this time."
"I hear the Clatchians claim that it was one of their fishermen," said Vetinari.
At the end of the table, Vimes's lips were moving. "Let's see. Acquiris?
You get what you grab," he said aloud.
"We are not going to take their word for it, are we?"
said Slant, pointedly ignoring him.
"Excuse me, my lord, but I don't believe that proud Ankh Morpork is told what to do by a bunch of thieves with towels on their heads."
"No, indeed. It's about time Johnny Clatchian was taught a lesson," said Lord Salachi. "Remember all that business last year with the cabbages? 10 damn boatloads they wouldn't accept."
"And everyone knows caterpillars add to the flavour,"
said Vimes, more or less to himself. The patrician shot him a glance.
"That's right," said Salachi. "Good, honest protein. And you remember all that trouble Captain Jenkins had over that cargo of mutton? They were going to imprison him in a Clatchian jail."
"Surely not. Meat is at its best when it's going green," said Vimes.
"It's not as if it'd taste any different under all that curry," said Burley. "I was at a dinner in their embassy once, and you know what they made me eat. It was a sheep's."
"Excuse me, gentlemen," said Vimes, standing up. "There are some urgent matters I must deal with." He nodded to the patrician and hurried out of the room. He shut the door behind him and took a breath of fresh air, although right now he'd have happily inhaled deeply in a tannery. Thank you.